Welcome in to DC On Screen, number 288. I am your host, David C. Robertson. This is my co-host, Jason Goss.
Hello.
And we are the show that talks the DC Universe on film and television. This is our weekly DCEU episode, so we'll be getting super spoilery on all of the DC film news that's been released in the past week. By the way, I hope you guys had a happy holiday, whatever that was for you.
and are looking forward to a fuck 2016 new year.
You know, I've actually actively been really annoyed with all of the hatred toward 2016 crap. Like, it's just a bandwagon that everyone's jumped on, and it's really annoying.
Like, it has been a very frustrating year.
How so?
I'm not talking about, like, in the global sense. I don't care about anyone else. I mean, I've had a frustrating year, and I want to get into a new one.
I've had a frustrating year, but, you know.
On a personal level, fuck 2016. Let's try this again.
On a personal level, I'm like, it was kind of similar to all the others.
Anyway. Right now, I'm brandishing that new hope of the future. It'll last 2 or 3 weeks.
Ah, hope brandishing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, gonna jump right into the news here. Lego Batman. They've released a new picture of Batman in a golden tux.
Yeah.
It says, in all the Batman movies, there's always a big gala. But one of the things Batman doesn't like doing is going out and seeing people and carousing as Bruce Wayne. He thinks Bruce Wayne is a bummer. He'd much rather be doing Batman-y things, says director Chris McKay. He says, but fortunately, Alfred entices him to come out of the Batcave by telling him, look, if you go out tonight to this gala, you can have a tuxedo dress-up party. So in the shot, this is one of the many tuxedos that Batman tries in a sort of dress-up party montage like Sex and the City.
Yes.
And it's him on, it looks sort of like a club or some sort of a disco dance floor or something. Yeah. And him in a gold tux.
It was blinging.
They've also released 6 new Lego Batman movie posters. One has Batman on it, it says Back in Black. One has the Joker on it, says Joke's on You. One that has Robin on it says Boy Wonder. Batgirls says She's So Boss. Harley Quinn says Wild Card. And Alfred, my favorite one of them, says Kick Butler.
Nice.
Yeah. Over to DCEU news. Jared Leto turned 45.
God, he doesn't look it.
No, he doesn't. It's probably all of the souls he's harvested over the years.
Whatever works for you, dude.
So, The Hollywood Reporter did a pretty extensive interview with Charles Roven, Warner Brothers producer Charles Roven. And they talked about the future of the DC films. And the actual article is a pretty cool article and interview. It's called THR's Producer of the Year, Charles Roven, on the future of DC films and what really happened between George Clooney and David O. Russell. I won't tell you what happened between George Clooney and David O. Russell, because it was a really good article, and you should go read it. It's very, very entertaining. I talk about Richard Pryor a little bit. It's fun. But we'll talk about the DC-related stuff. But Stephen Galloway was the interviewer, and he did a good job. It was a fun article. They talk about what it means to be a good producer, how the role changed through the years, how Charles Roven got started in the show business. Now, as far as DC films are concerned, this is what they covered. Stephen says there was talk you'd step away from DC films to some degree. And Charles says, the studio made me the producer of all the DC movies, and they announced 8. When we finished the timetable, we looked at each other and said, this is incredibly ambitious, but we haven't taken into consideration if something goes wrong. Now, a lot of headlines and stuff are saying that, you know, that WB still hasn't taken into account if something goes wrong. I disagree. I think they have, based on the last 2 movies, they have completely taken into account what if something goes wrong.
They have been jucking and jiving as it came.
And people are giving them shit about that, too. So
you can't have both, people.
And it looks like everybody wants them both. Like, people are just vying for both. Like, wait, we don't want... How are they not taking into account? Okay.
You should be both stalwart and brave and understanding and maybe a little malleable. But definitely malleable.
You've been bitching for months that they were changing things. Because they have no backbone, because they don't believe in their vision,
right,
or in Zack Snyder, and now here. So anyway, he goes on to say,
like, we the also fans as a whole, we are not a coherent group. That's what we're getting at here.
No.
Any single one of us might have a clear vision, but as a whole, we make no sense.
A lot of people I'm seeing don't have a lot of clear vision in of themselves. They're just contradicting themselves in their anger.
There's a lot of that too.
Like, why are you so angry?
Yeah.
Well, DC action isn't like, I don't care. I'm sorry.
It'll be okay.
It's not like the thing.
It'll be okay.
He also says, we also hadn't decided where we were going to shoot these movies. As difficult as it was for me to commute from Toronto to London to Italy, it became really clear I couldn't do the job that I do as a producer with Aquaman likely to shoot in Australia. I'm for sure producing the sequels of the movies that I have made, which is maybe an indication that those movies would have sequels. Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Suicide Squad?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's that. Steven says, how are Justice League and Wonder Woman going to be different? This is another thing that's getting a lot of clickbait play. It's pretty straightforward. Charles Roven says, Wonder Woman is an origination story, so the whole dynamic and the plot moves are different. And the plot moves are different than other DC movies. There's also a great relationship between her and the guy, Chris Pine, who crash lands on her island and is the trigger mechanism for her going back to man's world. And Steven says, what about Justice League? He says, we knew we were making a very serious, compelling, driving film with Batman v Superman. Now the bell has been rung, and the whole tone of the movie is lighter. And a lot of people are saying, you know, like this is, are acting like this is the first mention of it being lighter. It's not. It was always going to be lighter.
Yeah. That wasn't news as of the debut of BVS. I think there was some reaction even after the second and third trailers where people were already saying, "Oh, mm-hmm. okay, come on, guys, we're gonna do this, and then we're gonna do another thing."
Yeah, I can't remember his name now. The name escapes me.
It'll do that.
The guy that wrote with Ben Affleck, he wound up rewriting Batman v Superman after Dipshit took a pass. David Goyer took a pass. But even he said that this was the Batman v Superman was the Empire Strikes Back of the trilogy, Justice League being the hopeful thing that came later.
It's going to kill me now. We should know his name. We'll remember it later, like as soon as we stop recording.
No, we're going to have to find this out now. But
keep going. I'll look it up real quick.
But yeah, he said this months before Batman v Superman came out. Yes, they did change it a little more. They were a little more hard-lined on the hopefulness. I think it did make them freak out about Suicide Squad and maybe made them do some reshoots. But for tone, I don't know.
Chris Terrio, by the way.
Chris Terrio, that's it. God, I just couldn't think of it.
Yeah, I wish you knew. It was Chris. We've mentioned him like 80 times.
I know. So, Roven does dodge this question here. If there is a sequel to Batman v Superman or Suicide Squad, will the budgets be lower? They made less than the studio had hoped, which I think is true for Batman v Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, I mean, you know, studios hope a lot. But Roven says, Suicide Squad made almost $750 million. Batman v Superman did $873 million. Those two movies were huge hits. He's dodging that question.
That wasn't an answer. And yet, it was maybe a braver answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, So, yeah. I don't think there's much to the article as in terms of, like, what lies in the future of DC. Like, we know things are going to be a lighter tone. We've already known that. We knew that he was moving on to other things. He was just going to stay on certain projects. He wasn't doing every film.
Mm-hmm.
We've known that for a while. And he's already said, look, I can't be everywhere. He just reiterated it here. And if we're being honest, we knew that they hadn't considered that something would go wrong. So over on Instagram, Henry Cavill posted a picture that has fans freaking out. It's a picture of Henry Cavill with The Rock drinking fine liquor in a tropical paradise. And it says, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from Superman and Black Adam at The Rock. Today, we drink like gentlemen and come together as friends. We're excited for what the future brings. It says people thinking that maybe Black Adam would be the villain for Man of Steel 2.
No.
I don't think it would be.
No, surely not. I mean, not that it wouldn't be doable. It's just Shazam is going to be around. Come on. Wait on Black Adam.
I think there are too many great Superman villains I'd rather see.
Right.
Like, Anyway.
Or at least alternatively, do you want to see like Shazam in a big budget film? It's like Shazam versus, what is he, Dr. Worm?
I don't want to see anything anymore.
Maybe.
But no, I would like to see Brainiac, and I would like to see, I don't want to see Metallo very much.
I could do without Metallo, but Brainiac sounds fantastic.
I don't know that I'd call him Brainiac.
Eh, why not? I mean, let's do this.
You sure about that?
Why pull our punches? That's...
All right. So anyway, yeah, I don't know. Eh, I don't even want to see a Man of Steel 2 necessarily. If they did it, I'd probably want to see Brainiac and Lex Luthor doing something together.
I think there's a lot of people that would like to see Brainiac and would rather see like the whatever happened to the Caped Crusader version where Lex Luthor gets killed in favor of Brainiac, just so they can stop seeing Jesse Eisenberg act. I'm not in that camp, but there's a lot of people that are.
Well, the, whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow, you still see
Tomorrow, yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg. He would just have a brain on top, like a brain helmet or whatever.
Yeah, but presumably he would act differently. And I think there's a few people that would appreciate that.
I'll tell you what I want to see Jesse Eisenberg again, but I also want to see Lex Sr. come back, and I really want it to be Bryan Cranston.
I know. I'm rooting for you, too.
That's all I want. That's all I want in this life. I mean, it's not, because if that happens, I'll still ask for more.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But at least there'll be that one thing that happened.
That'll be that one.
That thing. One bright day.
So, on the Gotham City Sirens front, nothing official yet, but actress Stephanie Corneliuson, I guess, wants to play Poison Ivy. She's from a show called Mr. Robot. I've been told I should watch it. I have not seen it, so I don't know how good she is as an actress. She is an attractive lady. She doesn't really look too much like Poison Ivy to me, though. But, you know, I'm fickle.
I don't know.
She's a good enough actress. I might be persuaded to be in her corner.
She's got a picture up with some damned red hair that I know nothing of her. But on site, you know, she'd certainly get in the room for an audition.
Sure. She feels like another spin on Megan Fox. Now I don't know. She might be an actual good actress. But
I just like that people are actually like pitching their names for this thing. People are excited.
I know. That's awesome.
Isn't it?
I'm a little bummed that everybody wants to be like the naked plant lady, but nobody wants to be Catwoman. What's wrong with this world?
Surely there's somebody.
On to Suicide Squad.
Or actually, it may just be that everyone's thinking, I can do Poison Ivy, and all I have to do is beat Uma Thurman.
Oh, well, it's not. No, you have to beat the animated series is what you have to beat.
No, not on screen, sir. Different conversation.
We are ignoring Uma Thurman. I never want to speak of Uma Thurman again.
Good luck. I really wish you luck. I do. Not kidding.
Yeah, it sucks because she's actually a pretty good actress and everything else I've seen her in.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, but it was, we have a whole 30 minutes worth of talking about that somewhere.
I know what happened. Schumacher said, remember, we're making a cartoon. That is what happened. On to Suicide Squad. People who hated that movie, I'm sorry, but Suicide Squad is topping DVD and Blu-ray sales charts right now. Video Scan. First Alert sales chart says that they are the DVD and the Blu-ray are topping the charts and on Amazon. So,
take that, mortals.
That's a thing. It's happening. Clay Enos released a picture of Harley looking out of the window of a helicopter, and that was apparently on the last day of shooting. So, yay.
Mm-hmm.
All the headlines are like, a gorgeous picture of Harley to tide us over until Gotham City Sirens. And I'm like, she's looking out of a window. Okay.
Excellent.
Not my favorite picture that I've seen from Clay, but still amazing. I don't know.
Always is. Man has a very high bar.
So, he does. And by this measure,
Yep.
But, it looks like Deadpool and Suicide Squad are finalists in the makeup category. For the Oscars. So they're going to be, they're up against Deadpool, Dressmaker, Florence Foster Jenkins, Hail Caesar, A Man Called Ove, and Star Trek Beyond. Star Trek for the makeup artist and hairstylist thing, which isn't even going to be I guess, part of the actual normal ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a whole set of technicals that no one actually right now. Yeah.
Star Trek Beyond, that's stiff competition.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I don't know how Hail Caesar's going to... I haven't seen a lot of these others.
No.
Hail Caesar, I don't know. Like, they did a good job, but it ain't Star Trek Beyond good. Suicide Squad might actually have a chance, though.
Right.
On that. Somebody on our Facebook page like responded to that article and was like, "I've now lost faith in the Oscars." I'm like, "When the hell did you have it?
Right?
Like, why did you have it?"
I was around, I don't know, 8-ish when I lost faith in the Oscars.
So Viola Davis explained why she loves playing Waller. She was on Variety's Playback podcast. And she was asked how she liked being in a huge, big-budget superhero movie. She says, "I loved it, and I think I loved it because I didn't think that deeply about it. I just thought it was fun. What was fun to me about Amanda Waller, who was heavy, pearls, afro, she has no superhuman strength, but absolutely just puts fear into the hearts of all these villains. That appeals to me greatly. There's something about her for me that was familiar. I was working out the bad girl, but from a space that, for me, is based somewhat in reality. I liked playing with that power. It's something so often not given to women, that kind of unapologetic badassery."
Totally fair. What did they say about her in the movie? That is one mean lady.
Yeah. And, you know, when I saw unapologetic badassery, it occurred to me that, like, that phrasing made me think, I hope she winds up being, like, the Nick Fury of the DCEU. Like, she just shows up in movies causing trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just not really, like, it's not the same role as Nick Fury, but just being the connective tissue that just brings it all together. That would be a lot of fun.
Well, like,
I really loved her as Waller.
Like, if Lex doesn't spend his entire term in Justice League, the coming movie, just in jail, kind of doing ding, 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 ding. Say he makes it out. Well, I'd love it to be because she thought he should be out. Let him out. Nice little cameo from her later saying, "How do you think Luthor got out?"
Yeah. So there was an awesome video that Scanline VFX put out. It was a video of their breakdown of their visual effects from Batman v Superman. It's really cool. Yeah. I'll put up a link to it. Did you have anything
to say about it?
No,
it's just genuinely badass. Like, you have to almost watch it in pieces to get what they're doing. It's worth rewatching kind of in sections almost to kind of really see what they're doing, but it's really cool breakdown.
It's one of those for me that I didn't quite, like, I was in awe, and I watched it a couple of times because I wasn't completely aware of just how much CGI was applied in that movie. And that's saying something about the people who put it together.
Yeah.
The fact that it didn't come across to me as CGI. Like, I gave that movie some shit about a couple of shots that were CGI, and I was like, "Ah, oh, such a green screen bullshit." And then, like, all this stuff, I'm like, you know what? My hat's off to him. Yeah. I got nothing.
And simple stuff awesome. Too, like the scene where he rescues the people in the flood. There was like four rooftops in that scene, and one of them is apparently a real rooftop.
Mm-hmm.
Just simple stuff, but it never even crossed my mind that wasn't a real rooftop those other people were on.
Yeah, and I think the most impressive to me was I think it was like four different shots that they did, and then they like pieced them together so they could get the panoramic shot of the Batwing flying over, right, blowing up the cars.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And some of the cityscapes were just fascinating. I really loved watching the subtraction and addition of an entire city's just skyline.
Mm-hmm. It was really cool.
And you can see him just like take away a piece, put another piece in, take away another piece, put another piece in, and then you look at it and go, "Oh my god, that's the shot in the movie. That didn't look anything like the city I was just looking at."
Yeah, and you know that plays heavier. Like, I've often made the argument that, like, when people are like for like Tron Legacy, like when people are, is that what it's called? I don't know, the second Tron movie, whatever it was called.
Gotcha.
My brain went away. People were like, "Oh, young Jeff," like they did the CGI on the face of Jeff Bridges. They made him young for the bad guy or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It didn't look real. It looked fake. It was Uncanny Valley. And I'm thinking, watch normal Jeff Bridges. Watch any of these people that you think are real people, that you're like the actual actors. If you stare at a person long enough and with enough scrutiny, they stop looking real.
Yeah, they stop making any sense.
And I feel like, you know, it's sort of the same thing with, like, we see Doomsday and we're like, "That doesn't look real. That's bad CGI. Like, people said that." And I felt that way in a couple shots. And then, you know, I'm looking at this VFX reel and I'm like,
these guys, you know, are masters.
I didn't even realize, and I don't know that they did it for the whole movie. They didn't have Doomsday shots or anything. They probably called in a couple of different houses. But, sure. You know, looking at this, I'm like, it would not have occurred to me that this was CGI, like, on his face. Not that I had any reason to believe that these shots could be made in a real cityscape, or that they would just use a city for, you know, completely just use a city with no alterations for a separate fictional city. But, you know, knowing that there's CGI there, I'm like, and starting to scrutinize it going, oh my gosh, that was CGI. You know, it just makes you like think about, like, you know, Doomsday is CGI, so you're going to like tear it apart. But the other stuff you're not thinking about, you're just like, oh yeah, that's just a car driving. I don't understand. Why are we talking about this?
Yeah. Well, it's fun that you, like, if you're looking at the scene before and you're scrutinizing it, you're looking at it and like your instinct is like, ah, they got this shot like 80% wrong. It's terrible. Might as well round up to 100. And then when you look at everything that was actually in it, you're like, no, they missed like 5% of this that I didn't feel great about. Everything else is fucking perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some perspective there.
Overall, really cool. They released a picture of Wonder Woman taking the God Killer sword of Athena.
Mm-hmm.
Nice shot. About all I can say about it. Like, they're saying this is the you know, the moment where she decides to actually go into man's world and do something about it, try to save it. So, big character moment for her.
Yeah. Also,
I'd like to see that.
I'd be willing to lay a bet down right now that you're going to see something about that moment in trailer number 2.
I think we already have. It looks like she's pulling a sword out to take care of that general who's probably Ares.
I've seen that sword that she's kind of wearing as like the back pin of her dress, but we haven't seen her pull it out. I wouldn't be surprised if you actually saw her pull it out, and you know, because it's a nice little, I don't know, scene that it's backsplash that it's set in that she pulls it out of. It's probably going to be very pretty to watch.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the movie is concerned, the blade actually is emblazoned with the words, life is killing all the time. And so the goddess kills herself in the sacrifice of her own animal.
Hmm.
Something that Wilkinson, Michael Wilkinson, put in there.
Cool.
So as we know, the UN fired Wonder Woman.
Sure.
As an ambassador. A UN woman... Well, there a bunch of the UN employees were apparently staging a silent protest, whatever that means, against the ambassadorship. One woman said, referred to her as a large-breasted white woman of impossible proportions.
I think we mentioned that one.
And one woman, we actually didn't, I don't think, but one woman at the UN said that she was it was pop culture imperialism. Gal Gadot came out against these accusations. She said, there are so many horrible things that are going on in the world, and this is what you're protesting? Seriously? When people argue that Wonder Woman should cover up, I don't quite get it. They say if she's smart and strong, she can't also be sexy. That's not fair. Why can't she be all of the above? You can be sexy... Sorry, you can be beautiful and sexy and smart and successful and confident, but still, you can be vulnerable, she says. Linda Carter also... Which I almost left this for TV, but no, I'll do it here.
Mm-hmm.
Linda Carter was talking about the Wonder Woman ambassadorship as well. She says, what I find interesting is that they didn't look at the larger picture. I agree that the issue of gender equality is much larger than any character is, and I understand that a comic book character should not be representative of something that is that important. I agree with that. What I disagree with is this idea about Wonder Woman. She's an iconic defender. She's archetypal. She's the ultimate sexist. It's the ultimate sexist thing you can say. Sorry, to say that that's all you can see when you think about Wonder Woman. All you can think about is a sex object. And the interviewer says, what about the skimpy outfit? She said, yes, so Superman had a skin-tight outfit that showed every little ripple, didn't he? Doesn't he have a great big blue bulge in his crotch?
Or red. Depends on the year.
Hello. Oh, she didn't say blue. I misread that. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Didn't he have a great big bulge in his crotch?
Oh, okay.
Hello. So why don't they complain about that? And who says Wonder Woman is white? I'm half Mexican. Gal Gadot is Israeli. The character is an Amazonian princess, not American. They're trying to put her in a box, and she's not in a box.
So basically, okay, fine, have your complaint, we'll go. But get your shit straight.
Mm-hmm.
You have completely misread this character.
The interviewer said, did you ever think of your character as sexy? She says, if you think of the 70s, that was miniskirts and bikinis. I never really thought of Wonder Woman as a super racy character. She wasn't out there being predatory. She was saying, you have a problem with strong women? I am who I am. Get over it. I never played her as mousy. I played her being for women, not against men, for fair play and fair pay. Some critics called, the interviewer says, some critics called Wonder Woman a male fantasy, but wasn't the show more aimed at girls than boys? Linda Carter says, I still have women at airports coming up to me saying, oh, you don't know what it meant to me. That show got me through this difficult time, that difficult time. That's really where the fantasy became a reality, where Wonder Woman became something much more than a TV show or a comic book. And I'll tell you this, when women recognize me in airports, I hold them in my arms and they cry. If a guy comes up and says, oh my God, I had such a crush on you when I was a teenager, I say, talk to the hand, I don't want to know.
Yeah, sure. I've had probably one conversation with a guy about Wonder Woman for every five I've had with a girl about Wonder Woman, like back in the 19th. I mean, Linda Carter Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's roughly along those lines, like, oh yeah, yeah, I knew her when I was young. Like, great, okay, what do I do with that? Versus, like, a lot of the conversations I've had going with women are like, oh, man, she was awesome. Man, I loved watching her. She was just, like, she kicked ass. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
There were all these other characters, but, like, I had Wonder Woman.
What's odd is I have, like, I don't know, three or four women in my life that have been like, oh, man, I had such a crush on her.
I've run into a couple of those, too.
All right. Well, okay, cool. You know, not inspiring? Not really. Just had a crush on her. Okay.
Whatever.
Going on to Justice League. Henry Cavill, I don't know if he meant to, but he revealed key Justice League things. He said, talking about Justice League, he says, there's pretty much an argument between Superman and Batman as to who is the leader. So I guess Justice League is going to be Batman v Superman. I don't know.
Park Dukes.
Noon of Justice?
Yeah. He probably slept through most of the day. Evening of Justice.
Evening of Justice. Just us, Justice Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that was an episode of Darkwing Duck.
Which I'm sure will be around shortly.
We can only hope.
Yeah, DuckTales is back. It won't be long. Just wait.
You know the original DuckTales and Darkwing Duck were in two separate universes?
Yeah, they just aired so closely in my childhood that it was like an hour where I watched Ducks.
No, it was like one of the producers or something came out and they were like, because I think they were being asked about the new DuckTales, if there was going to be a Darkwing Duck revival or if it was going to mention it. And he's like, well, I mean, there are two separate realities. Didn't you ever wonder why Launchpad was a terrible pilot in DuckTales, but a great pilot in Darkwing Duck? Multiverse, man.
That's fine. I just, you know, I never worried about Baloo suddenly being a pilot in Tailspin.
I did. I wanted to know why.
I was like, when did he get off that island? Start dressing the top half of his body.
Well, you know, in Tailspin, they often referred to some sort of a war, like a great war. I just figured, like, all the humans died and the animals took over.
Right. As would naturally happen.
I mean, they became bipedal. I don't... If the animals became bipedal, I mean, I still think we would wipe them out, but still...
You know, what with our ability to already fly those planes and whatnot.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
They just snuck up on us, man.
I doubt evolution would be like, well, we got to do something with these planes.
Yeah, evolution. That's what it was. Like, they adapted, and then they were like, they adapted like 100 years ago, and they were like, we're just biding our time. We're slowly learning things. And then pounce.
One of them finally stole an owner's manual. They're like, the time is nigh.
Anyway, moving on. There's been a lot said about, again, a lot said about how suddenly we're making Justice League fun. This is not a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Zack Snyder was talking to Total Film about Justice League. He said, I think it's all in the characters inherently. This larger than life, big, fun stuff, especially when you're dealing with the Justice League. And I don't think this is out of turn. But, you know, what's more, I thought Batman v Superman was fun. So, I don't know, screw y'all.
I watched it with my like 4-year-old nephew, the little like battle scene, just the actual battle scene the other day.
Mm-hmm.
He had a wonderful time.
Yeah, I watched Superman pulling a ship through the ice. That was fun.
Yeah.
Sorry you guys didn't enjoy that. Sorry he didn't have a, you know, quip like Tony Stark. Sorry he wasn't womanizing.
Mm-hmm.
that's opening a can.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
Entertainment Weekly put out a new photo with the Flash, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And Zach says, I'm super happy with the chemistry of my League of Justice doers. And apparently they say he's in the middle of editing the Justice League now. Ezra Miller says, Flash is Ringo Starr. He annoys everybody, but he doesn't have any specific beef with anyone.
I don't know how the hell he's talking about Ringo that way. Shit ain't right, Ezra.
Oh, come on, man. Even I, a relative newbie when it comes to the Beatles, knows that, you know, no one, like, Ringo is absolutely everybody's least favorite.
Yeah, but not because he was annoying.
It's been...
just, he was the least favorite. It's not like everyone, no one ever looked at Ringo and thought, oh, that annoying sod.
I disagree. I think a lot, like, I've seen so many jokes in media about how Ringo is, you know, like, oh, it's Ringo, ugh. You know, like, everyone acts annoyed by Ringo. I don't know why.
Those are characterizations in my studies. Well, it's kind of like when everyone decided Aquaman was a joke. Because the joke
I'm not
built
saying
on
I agree
itself
with
for
it.
A while.
I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying it's part of the public vernacular. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not willing to put annoying in there. I'll fight for you, Ringo.
Okay. Miller also offered what they claimed was a blunt assessment of his fellow leaguers. Ezra Miller says, Uncle Fish Curry is very grumpy. Dad gets grumpy, too. I guess let's talk about Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman is very considerate, so even though she's annoyed with the Flash, she's still very compassionate.
Of course.
This might be the turning point for Ezra Miller. He seems like he might be going off the deep end a little.
No. No. No, this is perfect. This is perfect. And it's given me these wonderful images of, like, Jason Momoa turning to Ben Affleck, or, you know, Aquaman to Batman and just asking, can I crush the tiny Flash fast man, please?
Hmm. Now, you know, a while back they went to that big press summit on the Justice League set.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that's where most of this comes from. But they were talking about where that photo was happening with that photo. And they're talking about how they're standing. Basically, it says Batman, the Flash, and Wonder Woman are in a Gotham ventilation tower in this photo. It was a massive set built for an action scene. The group gets word of a parademon nest after a conversation with Commissioner Gordon and sets out in Batman's new four-legged crawler vehicle, a formidable spider-like tank which can crawl up walls, digging their way through a tunnel to the ventilation shaft or near Stryker's Island. Batman's crawler uses various weapons to fend off ravenous parademons trying to attack them. Once inside, they find a massive horde of the creatures and fight their way out, including a sequence on a long and broken bridge outside of the shaft. Eventually, the crawler ends up buried in water as the ventilation shaft presumably ends up flooded. And then the concept art apparently showed the three of them standing on top of the crawler as it became consumed by water.
Well, that's a waste of money.
What do you mean?
I mean, it sounds like an expensive vehicle.
It does. Of course, you know, editing is magic, so any of that could be changed.
Sure. I feel like I'm going to be watching that vehicle and watching it crawl up a wall somewhere and think, oh, man, this thing is amazing. And then 5 minutes later, they go, oh, fuck, I wanted that to stay around. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm. So they've announced that Lex Luthor and Queen Hippolyta are going to be in Justice League in WB's 2017 movie press kit.
I have heard.
People are already pissed.
I assume.
I'm sorry. I like Jesse Eisenberg. So, yay.
You just got to deal with him a little bit longer, guys.
Patrick Wilson is training for Aquaman. He was, apparently his sister-in-law, maybe? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Marika Domacek put up a picture on Twitter of them, and they were all sweaty from training. It says, in-laws who sweat together are awesome. Thanks for a brutal workout. And he says, yes, indeed, Orm has to prepare for a battle or two. He does not look as flabby as he once did as Night Owl.
Mm-hmm.
Nighthawk. What? Night Owl. That's all I've got. That's all I've got on the movie news.
Okay.
We didn't have any reviews for the contest. So if you would like to do that, you can give us a 5-star review, a 5-star written review on iTunes or Stitcher to be entered into the contest. The contest is 1 in 10 will win a trade paperback, Blu-ray or DVD, DC of course, valued at $15 or less. We will use a random number generator to pick who wins. I think we are one away from ending giveaway 3. So come on, guys. Come on, gals. win something.
Come get that free stuff.
Tell us how much you like us.
We may not see that again until TV gets back.
So anyway, that's all I got. And we are DC On Screen. You can find every episode at DCOnScreen.com. Thank you for listening. We're proud members of the Giant Size Team Up Network, GiantSizeTeamUp.com. Proud members of the Batman Podcast Network. And until next time, which should be, if you're doing it right, should be a DC TV news episode coming up directly. Keeps up DC on your screen.